music was Bumble Beat by Govi from the album Mosaica, and it has nothing to do with the show. I just like the music. You're tuned in to Sound Health on BBS Radio. I'm your host, Sherry Edwards. For the next hour, thank you for joining us. On this show, Sound Health, we attempt to bring you information and ideas about self-health in the hopes of supporting you to be the best at exactly what you want to be. Today on the show, our guest is Mark Allen. He's the author of The Greatest Secret of All. Well, do you remember all those conversations we had on the show about the movie The Secret and what we thought that movie left out and what it brings to our lives? We're going to talk about that in just a bit and Mark Allen's book and how it fits into all that. But we have a few announcements first. One, it is great to be back. I've been out on tour for about a month. We did stops in Colorado, Arizona, and New Mexico. Had a great time, great conferences. We did a video for the Visionary DVD Club. It's called Frequency is Frequency in New Medicine or an Ancient Mystery Revealed. That'll be available shortly. We'll keep you informed and how to get that. Made an appearance at the Sound Healers Conference and was invited to another conference to be a keynote speaker at a scientific affair. So this stuff is catching on about voice analysis and what it can do for you and the secrets it can reveal. You know, it really doesn't reveal anything you don't know. You're just really surprised the computer knew it. Well, we hope you missed us live. I'm told there was some great classics going on that they played for you. I hope you enjoyed those. As most of you know, this show is sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health Research. Here at the Institute, we study the sound of the voice and how your frequencies of your voice can reveal information about who you are. You can lie to yourself and other people with your words, but the frequencies of your voice reveal the truth. And for those of you who did not download our free vocal profiling software, that it's designed to reveal your information, your inner information about you, that's still available. Just write to me at radio@vocalprofiling.com. We'll give you a link to the software, the manual, and the free class. You know, at one of these booths, we were giving away this free software. And I mean, we were handing them a CD of this free and wonderful software called NanoVoice. And one lady that came up to the booth said to me, "What's wrong with this? You're giving it away." And I thought, boy, how can we become so tainted that anything free must be bad or broken or a scam? I really would like to see that turned over and people to have some appreciation for what people are trying to provide to them. There's been about 8,000 people so far download the software, and many of them are waiting to join us in class because there are just too many of them. But people also say to us, how can you afford to do that? How can you afford to give something like that away? Well, my idea of being rich is to be able to afford to give away anything I want to give away. So I guess I'm rich now since 8,000 of you have done it. But we really can't afford to give it away. But we're going to do it anyway because we can't afford for you not to have it. It's too important. We're giving it to you so that you can see what's really important and what's really inside you, like bringing your consciousness out. You're not surprised by it. You're just, I guess, surprised that the computer would bring it out and help you make some choices. And there's a manual there. You really don't need to take the class with us because the manual is all self-explanatory. So write to me, radio@vocalprofiling.com, or go to one of our websites where we have lots of free videos, Nutra, N-U-T-R-A, Sounds, NutraSounds.com, and there's several videos of ours posted on YouTube. It's just YouTube.com. And do join us for the free classes and this article that we just wrote about movements to a new medicine, which is about human bioacoustic and acoustic biology. Okay, enough announcements. Mark Allen is the author of several books, but today we're going to talk about his latest one, The Greatest Secret of All, Moving Beyond Abundance to a Life of True Fulfillment. A little tiny book, wonderful little book, and it really has that stuff in it. Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me?
I can barely hear you, Mark.
Oh.
This is BBS Radio, and it's the voice of the people. So thank you for being with us.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes, that's
oh,
much
good.
Better. I don't know what happened.
I don't know. I heard some clicks, so maybe I don't know. I hope I'm coming through now.
You are. You sound great.
Good.
You sound like you have a kind, gentle, loving voice. Many times on this show, we've talked about the immensely popular movie, The Secret. Why it's so popular, what it brought to our consciousness, and what it left out. And I like to talk about things in terms of stories. So I'm going to tell you a story about The Secret and a lady that talked to me about it. And then we'd like your input because it just oozes right into your book. I was doing a workshop for the Agape organization that's Michael Beckwith, and he's one of the people who were interviewed for The Secret. And we had a whole audience there, just hundreds of people, and this lady walked up to me just seconds before we're supposed to go on. Are you still there? I still hear quick.
Mm-hmm, I'm here.
A lady walked up to me, and she said, I'm going to be your guinea pig for this evening. Now, I had already been there early and picked out the people that I was going to have give me vocal prints and all that. So I was a little surprised by what she said, and I said, well, by whose authority? Because I thought maybe Michael had sent her over. And she said, mine. The Secret said I could have whatever I want, and that's what I want, and that's what's going to happen. And I said, well, I've already picked out my people that I'm going to use for this evening. And I think part of what people need to learn about The Secret is that her rights began, or her rights stopped where mine began. And I think that's part of what The Secret left out, that you can have what you want, you can manifest what you want, if it's with integrity and it doesn't stomp on other people's toes like this lady was trying to do to me. So in light of that, you've written this wonderful book, The Greatest Secret of All, which is the next step beyond The Secret. Can you talk to us about your book?
Sure. I love The Secret, but I felt like so many others did that it didn't go far enough. I watched it, in fact, with Eckhart Tolle, one of my favorite people on Earth, who wrote The Power of Now and A New Earth. And he visited, and we hadn't seen it. So somebody had given me the DVD. We watched it, and after it was over, we sat there for a while quietly. And then I said, you know, how did you like it? And he said, oh, it was good. It was good. And I said, yeah, it was good as far as it went, but I said, I wish they would have interviewed you, Eckhart, to add some depth to it. And it just kept kind of haunting me, that idea. And then shortly after that, I saw a bio on TV of J. Paul Getty. Now, he sure knew the secret of manifestation. He was the richest man in the world. But he was miserable. You could just see it on his face and his life story was just sad. It was pathetic. And that stayed with me too. And I reflected on all the successful people I'd met who were still miserable or discontent or frustrated or just not happy. They hadn't found any kind of inner peace, even though they'd found a great deal of success in the world. So I just started then. It usually starts when I wake up in the middle of the night and I start making notes. I just start writing notes and have a pile of notes. And that's where The Greatest Secret of All was born. And the first half of the book is my little simple, I've developed a simple system of manifestation. I was a total poverty case all through my 20s and into my 30s. And then I started to apply this simple little system I'd put together from things I'd learned over the years, and it worked. I went from a poverty case to having far more abundance than I could ever dream of when I was 30. It worked completely, so I've been teaching that a lot. But all along the way, I keep saying, money doesn't make you happy. There are far greater secrets. I was just talking to a friend of mine from Brazil, and she used to clean houses for rich people and then work with the really poor people in the slums, the favelas, to try to get them fresh water. And she said she noticed the people in the slums were far happier than the rich people were. And she said, why is that? You know, they're singing all the time in the slums, and they don't have a bean, where the rich people have so much, and they're miserable. And it just led me to all kinds of reflection, which led to the book.
So it wasn't just one event between 20 and 30. It was a series of events for you?
It was a series of events, yeah. It all began on my 30th birthday, the day I turned 30. Through my 20s, I'd known one very important thing. I was born knowing something important. And I'm convinced we all are born with some incredible gift to share to the world. We're all creative geniuses in a way. We all have special talents to share. Often they're just so natural to us, we don't even know what they are, and we need to discover them. The talent I was born with, the thing I knew, was that it was important to do what I loved. My dad wanted me to follow my brother and to study business in college and go into business. And no, I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to be a musician. And I remember he said, oh, you only work 40 hours a week for the corporation. You have another 40 hours a week to be creative. And I remember thinking, no, Dad, not for me. If I worked 40 hours in a job I didn't like, I'd need another 40 hours to recover. So I ignored my dad, and I'm really glad I did. He came around finally to being glad I ignored him too, finally in his old age. But I ignored his advice, and I did what I loved, and I became an actor. And then the company I was in fell apart, and I joined another company, and that fell apart. And I had a rock band, and that fell apart. And I wandered around through my 20s, just exploring all kinds of things, but nothing stuck with me. In fact, I kept having this subconscious image. It was all like sand through my hand, leaving me with nothing. And I was a total poverty case. Then I turned 30, and I woke up in a state of shock, realizing I wasn't a kid anymore. I remember that day just vividly to this day. And I paced up and down I had a little one-room slum apartment in a bad part of Oakland, California. A lot of violence on the streets, and not a good place to be. And that's when I started putting together things I'd learned but had never applied. I'd tried a back to the land experiment too in my early 20s that was a disaster. But I remembered the day I turned 30, something we did during my back to the land experiment. Just one night we were sitting around a fire, and this one couple said, let's play this game we play at church camp. Let's imagine 5 years have passed and everything has gone as well as you could imagine. What would your life look like? And we went around the circle, each person saying whatever they said. I don't remember a word of what I said, so it obviously had no impact in my life. But the day I turned 30, I thought, this is a good idea to play this game. But this time I wrote it down. I took a sheet of paper, and this became the first step that I teach now. I took a sheet of paper, I wrote ideal scene at the top. And I imagined 5 years had passed, and everything had gone as well as I could imagine. What would my life look like? What would I do, be, and have? And much to my amazement, I'd had no interest in business. I'd been an actor and a musician. I even had no interest in making money. I did think money was the root of all evil, somehow. I saw Zeffirelli's film, Brother, Sun, Sister, Moon, in my 20s about 7 times, and it's about St. Francis. And how he gives everything back to his dad, even the clothes off his back, and he walks out of town naked with nothing. And that was my dream, to live like St. Francis. But it wasn't working. I was scrounging for the rent, a word we use all the time. And it slowly dawned on me, St. Francis rebuilt old churches. He built a huge nonprofit organization, basically. You know, in today's words, that's what he did. He built a nonprofit organization that became associated with the Catholic Church. Well, I was building nothing. And being a total poverty case, it just, somehow it was cool in my 20s, but when I turned 30 and wasn't a kid anymore, it was not cool anymore. So I took a look at my life and I wrote ideal scene down on a sheet of paper. And much to my amazement, I the words that spilled out were, I have a successful publishing company publishing my books and music. I'd never written a book. I'd never recorded my music. And I'd never had any interest in business, never taken a course or anything. And I have a beautiful white house on a hill in Marin County, California, which was the most beautiful place I'd ever seen in Northern California. It's north of San Francisco. It's gorgeous. And then doubts and fears started coming in immediately. But I dared dream my ideal, and I even put what's become my unique contribution to humanity. I also put, and I have a life of ease. I don't work too hard. I only work when I feel like it. My doubts and fears said, impossible. It can't be done. You got to work really hard to create your own business. My own dad had said, you got to work 60 to 80 hours a week in a startup company. And when I told him I was starting a company, his first words were, you know, 80% of businesses fail in their first 2 years. That was the kind of family support I got.
So this is your publishing company?
Yeah, and so the day I turned 30, I started a publishing company with no money, no family money, nothing. I didn't even have a job. So actually my first plan was get a job, any kind of job, and try to save 20% and put into my first publishing projects, which I did. And then I got fired from that job. So I had gotten a job as a typesetter, and they fired me for not showing up on time. And so I ended up starting my own little typesetting operation to finance my publishing. And once I focused on that goal of setting up a successful publishing company, I started getting help from everywhere. And I took four little steps, and that's what I teach in The Greatest Secret of All. I wrote my ideal scene down, and then in that I realized I had a whole list of goals. Start a publishing company. Start writing a book. Start recording an album. Start learning about real estate. And I listed 12 goals, it was. And then I'd heard about affirmations in my 20s. I'd read about them in a book by Catherine Ponder, a Unity church minister, who wrote a bunch of books in the 70s. I read a few of those, and they were all about affirmations, so... Then the third thing I did, I rewrote each goal as an affirmation. I am now creating a successful publishing company. I am now writing a powerful book. I am now recording an album of beautiful music. And then, and this was a real breakthrough for me too, I took a phrase from Catherine Ponder and added it to each affirmation. The phrase is in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way. So I started literally affirming, sitting here in my little one-room slum apartment, I said, I am now creating a successful publishing company in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way. I am now writing a powerful book in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way. And then the fourth step just happened over time. For every one of my major goals, start a publishing company, write a book, record an album, get into a real estate, I made a one-page plan in writing. I wrote a plan in a page. At first, my first plan, like for my business, was just a few things because I knew nothing about business. So all I could write down was read a used business 101 textbook and talk to people who know more than you do about business and learn what business is all about. And then I did those things, and it led me to learning about business plans. And I literally made a one-page plan, my goal and strategy for my company.
Do you still have your publishing company today?
I still have it. It's cooking. We're having our best year ever.
we do very, very well.
Awesome. Why do you think this is such a hot topic about manifestation? This is the way you do it. Why do you think you're such a success using this fulfillment awareness kind of idea?
Well, I realized, and at first I was kind of putting myself down, thinking, I don't understand the complexities of so many of these writers. And I took one course in philosophy in college before I dropped out of college, and I didn't know what they were talking about. And so I thought, you know, I have kind of a simple mind. I have to understand things simply. Later on, that all kind of turned around, I think, as my self-esteem turned around. And I thought, it's a good thing to understand what can seem like complex ideas in very simple terms a child would understand. Once I can express and understand things very simply, it feels like my subconscious mind really gets it and can run with it. I tell everybody, and I try to give the essence of what I know away every time I talk. So including now, I try to give the essence of what I know away. I tell everybody, everyone can succeed doing what they love to do. We have all the tools we need within us. We have an incredible body, you know, phenomenal physical body. We have this amazing brain. We're just beginning to discover how amazing it is, and we just use a tiny part of it. And we all have some deep connection to a subconscious mind, you can call it, or you can put it in different words. You can call it intuition, or, you know, gut feelings, or basically knowledge that comes from a place deeper than our rational mind. We all have this connection. Once we really start focusing on a goal and affirming we're creating that goal, and the best affirmation for me is in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way, once we start affirming that, the whole universe, in a way, or our subconscious mind, you can say, says yes to it and starts showing us exactly what to do next, what steps to take, who to call, what to do. The specific steps to take become obvious to us if we keep focused on that goal.
So people should say these affirmations in a positive way. They shouldn't say, this is not going to be hard. They should say in an easy and positive way.
Right.
Do you teach people how to write these affirmations?
Yes, I do. I write about them a lot. They're in all my last four books. Shakti Gawain in Creative Visualization, one of the first books I published, has a wonderful section on affirmations. I think that's the single best book about affirmations, is Creative Visualization by Shakti Gawain. But my books, too, I talk about it and tell exactly what I did, those four steps, ideal scene, a list of goals, goals as affirmation, and then a one-page plan for every major goal. To this day, I carry around a list of goals as affirmations in my pocket.
Do you think this is such an important topic to people because they're ready to be successful and that just hasn't been in our mindset as a population?
Yes, I think so. I was really so glad the movie The Secret did so well. And I know for me, my first 5 years after I started the company were chaos because I didn't understand these things. And I still had a lot of deep beliefs working against myself. I believed I was a fool with money. I believed I didn't understand money or understand business. And so it was just chaos and losses my first 5 years. And then everything turned around. And it was just a couple of things that did it. Two things, really. One, I heard a phrase on the radio. The phrase I heard, it's when I hit my financial low. I was $65,000 in credit card debt. And this was the early 80s. So that was a lot of money then. And my whole company was on the edge of bankruptcy. Our distributor had collapsed and gone bankrupt and didn't pay us for 6 months worth of sales. So we were just barely hanging on and paying the rent. It was struggle. And it was emotional and difficult. We had to lay people off. It was my worst time financially.
Driving into work one day, I heard somebody say this phrase. It turned out later it was Napoleon Hill in Think and Grow Rich. But the phrase was, is, within every adversity is an equal or greater benefit. And I pulled over and wrote that down. I didn't want to forget it. Then under it, I put in big letters, within every problem is an opportunity. And I put that up on my phone. And I started asking myself, whenever people would come and say, we got another problem, I'd start asking myself, I'd acknowledge the problem. We get the problem. We know what the problems are. But then I'd start saying, what's the opportunity here? What's the benefit? Later on, we published a prose version of the Bhagavad Gita, too, this 5,000-year-old text. So there's nothing new in this, because in there it said, even in the knocks of life, we can find great gifts. Even in the knocks of life, we can find great gifts. I wrote that down, too, and literally started asking myself, okay, here's the problem. I'm on the verge of bankruptcy. What's the opportunity here? What's the benefit? What's the gift? And I found an amazing thing. When we ask those questions, we get answers. It's what I've been just preaching for the last year with so many people in such fear about this recession and, oh, I'm losing my job and you know, everything's going downhill. Is this a depression or a recession? Oh, stock market collapse, real estate collapse, all this fear, fear, fear. And I keep saying, there are opportunities, benefits, and gifts in every moment. If we ask what they are and focus on them, people made fortunes in the middle of the Great Depression. Some of the biggest fortunes in the U.S. were made in the middle of the Great Depression. Some of our best companies were started in depressions and recessions, because when people get laid off, they don't have a job, they have to start their own. There's always a burst of entrepreneurial spirit out of desperation. It's true, but I heard, I mean, GE and a lot of huge companies were started in the Great Depression. In the recession of the 70s, Apple Computer was started, Microsoft was started, my company was started.
So what stopped us from being fulfilled? There's no vision of what we could have?
What was the first part of that question?
So what stops us from being fulfilled is the lack of vision from what we could have.
Yes, exactly. I realized the day I turned 30, I really had no vision. I had no goal even. I was just kind of wandering around trying to pay the rent every month. That was my goal, really, every month, paying the rent. I met some wealthy people when I was playing music at that time, I remember, and they sat down to me and they said, you know, we're kind of like you, except you just scrounge for the next $100. We just scrounge for the next $100,000. And I walked away stunned thinking, oh, is that my problem? I just need to add some zeros to what I need to make.
Wow.
And in a way, my subconscious said, yeah, you could add a few zeros here to your visualization. All you're visualizing is a $65 a month rent, which I just sort of magically barely made every month. Well, add a couple zeros to that, you know?
And it worked.
And it worked.
We are going to be taking some callers. Our toll-free number is 877-876-5227, Canada 888-815-9756. The direct line is 530-8763-222. And if you can't remember all those numbers, you can certainly jump on bbsradio.com, and just the numbers are right there on station one. Or you can also write to me at radio@vocalprofiling.com. I'm monitoring the email, so you could write to us and we'll put your question on the air. Oh, look, that's what our people like to do. They like to write to us. So we'll be monitoring that, and if you write in, we'll certainly put on the air. Okay, you talked a bit about in your life how this awareness came to you. Was it something that you just turned around in a day? Did you turn it around in a week? Are people looking at a year to get this turned around? Or?
Well, it took me an afternoon to get focused on a goal. then it took 5 years for me of struggle because I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know the first thing about business, and I kept looking for somebody else to come along and help me that knew more than I did. Some big daddy to rescue me, or big mama to rescue me, tell me what to do. And that person didn't show up. Then in my financial low, that's one thing I got when I said, what are the benefits of being on the verge of bankruptcy? What are the opportunities? What are the gifts? One answer I got among many, but one was, you've been waiting all along for someone else to come and rescue you. It's time for you to take total responsibility and you run the ship. You know everything you need to know. Money is very simple. Managing money is very simple. You just need to get to a place where you make more than you spend. It's not difficult math whatsoever. It's not complicated whatsoever. You know? I'm sorry about that phone ringing.
That's okay. I just thought it was on the station.
And I learned then that's where things really shifted for me. And I realize now looking back, what shifted was my subconscious thinking was for the first 5 years, I need people to help me, help me. I'm struggling here. I'm losing money. Help me out. And I got people that were also struggling and weren't capable of helping me out. But as soon as I took real responsibility, so it all shifted around, I was able to say, hey, this company is a great opportunity for the right people that can come and really contribute to my success. I will share abundantly with them. And from the very beginning, I've always known about profit sharing and felt profit sharing was just obvious to me. You share profits with every person in the company, including the part-time guy in shipping. Everybody gets a good share of profits. I give half my profits to my employees. When I was thinking that way then, things just shifted around, and I got the right people to come in and whip me in shape financially and get my marketing together and get everything together that I didn't have together.
Did you hear that little beep, Mark?
Yes.
I think that means we have a caller.
Okay.
Is there a caller on the line with
there
us?
There sure is. Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hi. I thoroughly enjoy your discussion.
Do you have a question for Mark?
Pardon?
Do you have a question for Mark?
Yes, I do. I'd like to know if you could articulate a bit about some of the business discipline that you follow. And I don't mean discipline in a bad way. I mean discipline that helps keep you on track and organized. And I'll listen back on the computer again.
Great. Yeah, Good question. So many of us feel you got to work so hard to succeed. That's our belief. I am basically lazy and always have been. I've never been a morning person. And I tried this experiment when I started my company. And the way I got around my doubts and fears was to say to them, I'm going to do this as an experiment. I'm going to only work when I feel like it. And I don't like mornings. I don't do mornings. I don't do Mondays now either. For years, I haven't done Mondays or mornings. So I get into work about Tuesday afternoon, about 1 or 2. And I work till usually 5:30. And I do that Tuesday to Friday. So all I work is 20, 25 hours a week. I've never worked more than that. I used to work a few evenings a week, and then I met this therapist that said, the best thing you can do for your family is to be there for dinner every night. So, because I have a son, I'm now home at least 6:30 for dinner. So, I work those afternoons. Occasionally, I'll work a Saturday afternoon, too. But I've built a multi-million dollar company with multi-million dollar profits by only working 20, 25 hours a week.
And you motivate your employees by sharing profits with them.
Yes, they're definitely motivated. Some employees that are key employees and really contribute make bonuses that are far greater than their annual pay now. So I have people who've been with me for years. People don't leave. I have I call it the Get Rich Slowly with Mark program. And I tell employers, if you want to build a great, successful business, set it up so your employees
get wealthy. You'll have such committed employees, and they all think like owners, and everyone can maximize sales and cut costs in some way. So I tell people, I'm even lazy. You can be lazy but still persistent. The most important thing is to just keep focused on that goal. Don't lose sight of the goal. And it doesn't mean you have to work all the time. I literally only work when I feel like it. I take a lot of vacations. There's many times when I just let that goal go and don't do anything to move toward the goal for a period of days and weeks even. But then I get back to it.
Were you able to engender this loyalty even when you weren't making profits?
Did I engender? Well, I remember saying to them early on, stick with me and help me make a profit, and I will share half my profits with employees. So
I also have an email that just came in. This is from Carol. I've read your book and love it, especially the part of us about having a unique purpose and place in the world. One of the issues I see is that people try to be who they are not. They try to emulate others and forget to be themselves. Would you comment on this?
Ah, yes. That's so important. It seems to me obvious that success is different for each person. And some of the most important work we can do is really define, what does success mean for us? What do we want to do with our lives? And that's where that little exercise of ideal scene tricks us into really thinking that. I mean, I got very clearly, for me, my ideal is to have a life of leisure. And I had this image here when I was in my little slum apartment, the day I turned 30, I wrote my ideal scene. And the image I had was, I had this big white house on a hill. So I had lots of wealth, but I had lots of time to just wander around the yard. And I had hammocks hanging out back and a lot of time to lay in those hammocks and do nothing. That's my ideal. Now, that's different for different people. Some, their ideal might be speaking to thousands of people or traveling the world or whatever it is. But really getting clear on, that's what success means for me. That really helped me make the decisions that led to achieving that. And now I do have that big house on a hill, and I've got something like a dozen hammocks out back.
Is it white?
In the summer. It was white when I bought it, and now my wife is from Brazil, and we painted it sort of a light salmon with dark salmon trim. My son calls it pink, but it's not pink. It's this tropical salmon color. But it was exactly what I dreamed of when I bought it. I realized, this was the house I'd had in my mind for all these years.
A couple more emails. This is from Charles. I was recently embezzled for thousands of dollars. That outcome was not in my mind, yet it happened to my company and caused many people to suffer. How did this happen without me consciously willing?
You know, things like that happen to us are so complex, and you could spend hours, days, and months analyzing why it happened. But I think the best thing to do, by analyzing that, I mean, that it might be valuable for you to really maybe spend some time analyzing that but ask, what lesson do you need to learn from that? What lesson? What didn't you know that led to that? That might be very valuable. But the most important thing is to let it go and move on. Keep focused on what is full, that half full side of the glass. Keep focused on that. Don't spend a whole lot of time focusing on the half empty part. Because what we think about expands. And if you start getting too concerned about why did that happen, or for God's sake, don't feel resentful or let go of any resentment as much as you can. And just move on. The past happened. What happened, happened. We've got this moment now. As so many people have said, James Allen wrote a great book called As You Think, this English writer in 1904 that's kind of become my Bible. And a while ago I heard, in fact, the Dalai Lama, he was quoting James Allen
from Tibet. So there's nothing new in all this. It is a global knowledge that's coming forth. But both of them said, what we are today is the exact culmination of all our thoughts of yesterday. What we will be tomorrow is the result of our thoughts of today. So don't get too worried about the past problems. Ask yourself, what are the opportunities for you right now? What are the gifts? What are the benefits? Maybe even in that embezzlement, there's a great gift for you. There's a great benefit. You need to learn something to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Mark,
you were sloppy in some way.
Or maybe now to go a different direction. Right?
Maybe. Maybe it's a message to do something very differently.
Is manifestation supposed to be easy or hard?
Well, I keep affirming that I do everything in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way. And that has become that affirmation. I do easy things now, and I realize I turn down the hard stuff, the hard projects, the ones that seem stressful or that would require hard work, or I just don't do them anymore. I only do what's fun. I wrote my big book, The Millionaire Course, just before The Greatest Secret of All. And writing that, I was looking back on 25 years of success after, I started at age 35. Until I was 35, I was a total poverty case. And then I really turned it around. And I kept saying, what made that difference? What turned it around? And how can I simply understand it? You know? And I realized it was a belief that changed in me. I had this belief that life was hard. Success was hard. It took hard work. I really wasn't willing to work that hard. It was hard. And looking back, I think that affirmation over and over, it's saying, and it, I am now succeeding. I am now creating the business of my dreams in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way. I think those four words, repeated, easy, relaxed, healthy, positive, overcame a huge amount of my doubts and fears. Because what are our doubts and fears? It ain't easy. It's hard. It's hard. We keep hearing it's hard. We keep telling ourselves it's hard. Well, if we start telling ourselves it's easy, yeah, it's remarkable. Our subconscious takes in that word. Oh, you want it easy? Oh, sure. It can be easy. It can even be relaxed. Oh, my God. Our whole culture is so stressful. You know, we come from a type A workaholic culture. We're taught that. I heard an ad on the radio the other day. In your stressful day, you know, or there was this TV ad that had stress coming at you in jagged letters, like trying to make you stressful, you know. And then it assumes everybody's stressed out, so then you need this pill or that, you know, whatever it is, product. And I look at those and just shake my head and I say, no, I don't feel stressful. I keep affirming I am succeeding in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way. And I really think that affirmation, repeated thousands of times over the years, has taken root in my subconscious. And that's been one of the main things that's totally shifted the quality of my life.
Thank you. That was beautiful. We have another email here. It says, I've read your book, and in it you talk a lot about the need about our leaders to follow the teachings of Christ. What about the separation of church and state?
Ah, that's it. This is actually just one short little thing in The Greatest Secret of All that has definitely had the most impact and has had the most people responding to. But I just said, I mean, the separation of church and state, yes, that's a great idea. And it's built into our Constitution, and I really hope it will forever remain that way. Because our visionary founders, and they were visionaries, I mean, think of it, they came out of a monarchy system, and they invented this new system. And they saw all the problems that had happened where
various kings over the years in different countries had insisted on a state religion. They insisted everyone had their religion, accepted their religion, and what amazes me is the hypocrisy of that, because every religion at its core is all about love and tolerance and compassion and peace. Every one. And so I mentioned for about three paragraphs, I think, in The Greatest Secret of All, I say, you know, every one of our leaders does claim to be Christian, but how many of them really followed the words of Christ? I saw a great bumper sticker the other day. What countries would Christ bomb? And I think didn't Christ say, Peter, put away your sword? If you live by the sword you die? Didn't he say, love one another? Didn't he say, turn the other cheek?
It's in Titus or Joel. I can't remember. They're both really short. But it says how to be a good Christian, to be peaceable and humble, slander no one, and show true humility to all people.
Yes.
What else is there? I did not read all of this lady's email. It says, the other statement here, it sounds like Palin's platform. Did you vote for her?
Palin's platform. I didn't think Palin had a very Christian platform myself. Allowing firearms, all the firearm stuff, and all the Christians that support atomic bombs and invading Iraq, I don't think that's a Christian attitude at all. What countries would Christ invade? I don't think Christ would invade any countries. I do think that maybe Obama is closer to a Christian figure than any president we've had in a while. The only world leader I can think of that was close to being Christian was Mahatma Gandhi in India. And of course, he was Hindu. But his values were close to Christ's values. Nonviolence is Christian.
Well, one of his famous quotes, we must become the change we want to see.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's an awesome quote.
Yeah.
This lady didn't say any more about Palin, except that sounds like Palin's platform. I have several more questions I want to ask, but there's a really interesting email that came in, and I try to monitor these and just read the good parts, but I cannot separate this one. And I think there's an important question in here, so I'll just read it the way it came in. Question, Mr. Mark, have you ever been hungry, really hungry, with little hope of your next meal? Well, I have as a child and as an adult. You sound like someone who's never been hungry. Then you would see that thinking about manifesting food for yourself or your child doesn't put it on the table. You sound like someone who has made it. Now you set in judgment for the rest of us that we don't have what we think we deserve because we can't manifest. Sounds to me like you're blaming the victim. What would you say to a hungry child about the pain in his belly that only food would satisfy?
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's a good question. I have been hungry. I have had my periods for sure in my 20s of total, complete poverty where I really was looking for the next meal. I lived for a while in an abandoned house, and I definitely went through that. I mean, all you can say about hunger, and I don't mean to sound in judgment. I do remember real poverty and struggle and anxiety. And yes, I've completely changed that. And so part of what I have to share with humanity is hope for change. But I know when you are hungry, yes, your focus, your goal has to be your next meal. And until you get that next meal, it's difficult to think beyond that for sure. And yes, many, many people are struggling for that next meal. I absolutely agree with Buckminster Fuller saying that the shame of our entire
culture, world culture, is that there is hunger because there's plenty of food. He said in the 1960s, we have the technology now. So, and this is what, 40, 50 years ago now, to house and feed everyone on the planet. And it's shameful that we don't do it. The governments are absolutely failing in so many ways, but some of the most basic ways are, we're a wealthy country. We should be able to feed all our people, house and feed all our people, and house and feed a whole lot of the rest of the world with the cooperation of other countries. That is a shame that it isn't happening. And all I can say is I don't mean to be in judgment of people. In fact, my goal is to really become more and more successful so that I can really concretely help a lot more people. And I do help feed a lot of people. And my wife and I have a nonprofit called Brazil Hope because my wife is Brazilian. And there are huge problems in Brazil cities with orphans that are living on the streets, homeless kids. And we contribute substantially to getting them fed and cleaned up and in school and off the streets. But yeah, I know when you're hungry, believe me, I'm not, boy, I hope I don't sound judgmental. And I think they're saying, well, then affirmations, you know, my next meal will come in an easy way, won't help. Well, I have found our mental attitude really does make a difference. If you're hungry and full of resentment and anger, you can end up turning off opportunities that come your way. Your anger and resentment are the worst things to have when you're hungry or at any time. I think our anger and resentment are the biggest enemies humanity has to face.
You talk about two things in your book about this, the importance of attitude and then preparation to hear the laws of manifestation.
Yes. It's not about deserving. I remember I had a real breakthrough one time walking around. I remember frustrated with something, and this thought just drifted in my mind. It was, Jesus said, ask and you shall receive. He didn't say, ask and you shall receive if you deserve it. It's not even about deserving. Or we all deserve it. We all deserve to be well fed. We all deserve, in fact, to be successful and to live the life of our dreams.
We only have a few minutes left. How can people get in touch with you about your books, about your seminars?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I have a website, markallen.com, markallen.com, that tells about my books. And I do these free teleconferences every month, the first Wednesday of every month. I just did one. There's information there. And I have books in a course I've done. And then my publishing company is New World Library. You can just go to newworldlibrary.com, and we have hundreds of wonderful books and other projects.
It's an amazing book. You can get it on Amazon. It's only $7.20 there.
Yeah, cheap.
And
such a deal.
32 in stock. It's even on Kindle, if any of you are into Kindle. I love my Kindle.
Oh, great. Yes, $14 retail for a hardcover, $18, and on Amazon it's only $7.20.
Mm-hmm.
So they bought a whole bunch of them, so I'm glad they're discounted.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
I have lots more questions. We do have some other emails. Maybe we can have you back.
Oh, I'd love to. Anytime.
We have to go. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Mark, for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
Remember what Gandhi said, we must become the change we want to see.
Yes. Amen.